everybody. Welcome to another episode of Action Features. It's going to be a little bit different this episode than normal. It's not just me and Mike here. We teased this last show that we would have one of the members of the Four Horsemen Toy Design Group here. And do you want to tell which one you are?
Yeah, this is Cornboy, H. Eric, Cornboy Mays from Four Horsemen Toy Design. How you guys doing?
Very good, man. Very good. Hey, does everybody know that you get your name Cornboy from your last name Mays? Is that where you get it from?
Well, kind of. That's what everybody asks, but it's a little bit different story. The nickname Cornboy came from a Yugoslavian guy that I used to work with in a machine shop when I first moved to New Jersey. He asked me if we had cattle in Indiana, where I'm originally from. I said, no, we don't really have cattle. We have mostly just corn. He goes, oh, so you're a corn boy. And that just kind of stuck.
Wow.
And when I moved to, and, you know, maize does mean corn, but in Native American, but that had nothing to do with it, really.
That's
and then
crazy.
When I went to McFarland Toys, there was another Eric that worked there. It was Eric Treadaway. And one of the guys that ran the place was like, how am I going to know you two guys apart? Well, you're both Erics. And I said, well, you can just call me Cornboy. I was just kind of joking, but it stuck, and it's just kind of like become my nomenclature for people who know me in the industry now. Now everybody calls me Cornboy. Even my wife calls me CB sometimes.
That's how it happens, man. You cannot control your nickname.
Like that Seinfeld episode where
exactly.
George tries to get T-Bone, and he can't get it.
Yeah. I've had quite a few nicknames through my life. So
well, easy.
Cornboy
this
is
a family
not the worst.
Show.
I can... yeah, I can deal with this one. This one's a good one.
Well, I thought I was being all clever because I remember that Batman the Animated Series episode where Mockridge is in the maze. If you're so smart, why are you rich? And he says, because the corn really... And I didn't know at the point when I saw that maze was corn. Yeah. But then later on, since then, I've always thought of corn and maze. And when I saw your last name, I just assumed that's what it was for. But I was totally wrong. It has a totally different meaning.
You learned something.
I learned something new.
No, sir. I do have a Native American background, but and my grandpa changed the spelling of our name from the rest of the family because he did not like the other members of his family.
Wow.
Back before you had to go through courts to do that. But, the name Maize does actually mean corn, but my name's spelled a little differently from that.
All right. Well, that's it for the show today.
That's
all we wanted to talk about was how Cornboy got his name.
That was a good show.
We can't cover everything you guys have done because that would be, we'd be on this show for the next 3 weeks. So we're trying to just get to just what's current right now, what's currently happening. But just as a little bit of a background for people that may not know, most people listening to the show are going to know who the Four Horsemen are. But in case you don't, they're a awesome toy design studio that started back in the McFarland days. And correct me if I'm wrong anywhere in here, Cornboy. They started back in the McFarland days in the 90s, was it?
Yeah, it was.
And then you guys went off and did your own design studio, splitting apart from McFarlane, and started working for Mattel. You've done work for NECA, and you've done a ton of stuff for yourselves. And they've covered tons of toy lines. If you've been a collector in the last 15, 20 years, it's almost guaranteed that you've owned something that the Four Horsemen have worked on. From Masters of the Universe Classics, the 2000X Motu line, DC Universe Classics, the Movie Masters, all that McFarlane stuff, the NECA Ninja Turtles, the comic version Ninja Turtles, there's tons and tons of stuff you guys have worked on. Harry Potter, all these different lines that you guys have contributed to. So
NECA's Nightmare Before Christmas, there's a little bit of Toy Biz stuff, Marvel Legends stuff that we did for him here and there. And yeah, we've had our hands in a lot of different pots. We've been very fortunate.
DC, you did some DC and Mattel stuff, right?
Yeah, the Universe Classic.
Oh yeah, all the DC... From the Batman line they started doing through the Batman and Superman line, through the DC superheroes, through DC Universe Classics, and now DC Multiverse, we're doing a lot of that work. We did all of it up through DC Universe Classics, and now we're doing some DC Multiverse stuff here. We just finished two new waves for them on the DC Multiverse stuff.
Oh. Is it just you four guys working
there? No, well, yes and no. I mean, it's a majority of the work is done right here in the studio, but we do have... sculptors that other sculptors and other fabricators that help out with that, and then sometimes we'll bring in help from the outside, like if it's crunch time, like during Toy Fair or before Comic-Con or Power Con or something like that, we'll be, bring in other painters to help wrap things up and people to help with molding and casting or printing cleanup, things like that. So, no, it's just it's not just us three guys. We actually have Sherry Cook. Well, the three guys here, myself, Jim Preziosi, and Eric Treadaway, we're the co-owners of the studio. But we also have Sherry Cook, who works here full-time as our painter. So 99.9% of all the Four Horsemen product that hits the market is the original prototypes were painted by her. She's a machine and incredibly talented.
Yeah, that's a lot of output.
Yeah, yeah. She's, like I said, she is a machine and she's just unbelievably talented. I mean, and this is, that's the thing though. We, a lot of times we don't give her the time that she deserves to work on those projects. I mean, they're spectacular looking when they leave the door, but when, if she was actually given the time that she should have to paint those things, I mean, I don't believe that she can be touched as far as painting goes in the industry. She's absolutely amazing. We're lucky to have her here. Yeah.
Well, you guys are.
And then we farm out work sometimes for various digital sculpting and everything. So if there are any digital sculptors out there, we're moving into the digital world a bit here. Feel free to send us your portfolio. Email us at 4hmd@optonline.net, and we'll take a look at it.
My friend Joe Amaro has done some of the stuff for you guys, like the Battle
Ram. Yeah, we know Joe. Joe's done a lot of, like, well, at least, definitely prototype work for us. Some of the stuff that he's done, then we've gone back and tweaked and changed here and there. But for the most part, he gives us a really beautifully solid foundation, the stuff that we work on. Like, he designed that Battle Ram. I mean, obviously, he took the original and kind of rebuilt it, but man, the design he did for that thing and then the sculpting he did on it was immaculate. There were only a few minor tweaks and additions that we did to it when it came to our studio. He did a spectacular job on that thing. And a lot of the other jobs that he's done for us too. He gives us a nice, incredibly solid foundation to then get here and like make little tweaks or adjustments to that might need to be made. And he was a valuable resource for that stuff.
Well, you guys, I mean, like I said, we can't cover everything you guys do because it's just, there's so much. So we're going to focus in just on what you have currently running, and that's the Power Lords pre-order. Now, stepping back, Power Lords was a line from the early 80s made by Revell, based on designs by Wayne Barlow. And you guys brought it back in, what was it, 2013?
Yes, sir.
So what prompted bringing Power Lords back? I know Eric Treadaway is a huge fan.
That's essentially it. What happened was Eric Treadaway is a gigantic Power Lords fan, and I've always loved it too, but I never collected the figures, and I was never as into it as he is. But he has all the original figures. I don't think at the time that we started, I don't think he had all of them in package, but he at least had all of them loose, and he was a huge fan of them. And we had some of the figures in package, but way back when we'd always talked about if there was a line of figures that he himself would like to do, Power Lords was like his big one, like an oddball, weird line. And so we decided to try to find out who owned it. We found out that Color Forms had originally owned it, and then the license for it went to these people that ran Hank. Okay, bye. Sorry, one of the
that's it. He's off the show. The studio. So,
yeah. you know how things go.
Oh yeah.
So we found out that the guy who actually created it lived here in New Jersey, like maybe not even an hour from us. And the people who now owned the Power Lords license also own, what is that? Not Toss Across. It's some game. I can't remember. I forget. It's a game where you drop the little chips. Connect Four.
Oh, okay.
They own the rights to Connect Four. I guess their parents had owned it and everything. Now they own the license. So we were able to get in contact with them. And they were very much on board with us picking up the license and doing Power Lords. And then we got to actually meet with Wayne Barlow, the guy who originally created Power Lords. And Eric and I were both huge fans of his as well. He created a book called Wayne Barlow's Guide to Extraterrestrials.
An awesome book.
And for me, when I was a kid, that was like my Bible. I pored over that thing so much that I broke the spine on that book. I mean, it was pretty tattered. I think I still have it at home somewhere, but I definitely need to get a new one of that because it's an amazing book. If you get the chance to look it up, find it, and check it out. It's amazing.
I have a copy. It is a very cool book. It's very, very cool. It's basically just like the designs of extraterrestrials from different fiction books. And
yeah.
Gives you the visual look of what they're described as being in the book.
But in his style. I mean, it's just so freaky and out there that it's a beautifully done book. So we were able to get in contact with Wayne Barlow and actually go meet with him and talk to him. And he actually had tons of drawings and stuff that he'd originally done for that line and a lot of stuff that had never been produced. A lot of alternate versions of some of the main characters from the Power Lords mythos.
Oh, that's so cool.
And he said, you know, if you guys want to use this, feel free. Just bring it back to me when you're done with it. And so we asked him if we were allowed to photocopy, and he said, sure. We photocopied tons of that stuff.
Wow.
So we've got a pretty good archive of things that we can draw from as far as alternate versions of characters and stuff. And some of the ones that you see that are up for pre-order on Store Horseman now are like alternate versions or, you know, his concepts of some of the characters.
That's awesome.
That had never been produced before.
That's so cool to have one of the guy that designs it still involved in it this far down the line to then find out what else was going to happen.
He's an amazing guy. I mean, not only is he incredibly talented, but he's just the sweetest guy you'd ever want to meet. When I took all the drawings back to him, you know, I gushed over him, telling him how much of a fan we were of his work and how much of an honor it is to be able to work on this line and actually work hand in hand with him on some of the designs and stuff. So before I left, he said, you know what, if you want, pick a drawing out of that stack that you want.
Man.
These are original drawings. There's a lot of photocopies, but a ton of original drawings. I was like, no, I couldn't do that. And he's like, no, go ahead, whatever you want. I said, are you serious? He said, yeah. And I said, I can't do that. I said, I'd love to, but I can't. He said, if you don't pick one, then I'm going to go ahead and pick one for you, and you won't like it. So I pulled out this beautiful drawing he did of the original drawing of the Trigor ship.
Oh,
the
wow.
Drive. It's just unbelievable. And all the detail and stuff that's in this drawing, it's like this, I don't know if people are familiar with it, but it's this like horribly disgusting monster with like all of its organs on the outside and sections of him stitched shut and everything. And he's been turned into some kind of vehicle that the Power Lords drive around. It's really, really kind of macabre, but it's it's cool too. But it's a beautiful drawing, and I swear, if they would have done the sculpture the way that he did this drawing, here's the thing. I think the Power Lords was a little bit before its time, and I think it freaked out parents a little bit, and that's why it didn't sell as well as it could have back in the 80s, and it kind of went the way of the dinosaur a little bit too soon.
Yeah.
I think it was a little bit ahead of its time, and it's a little bit too freaky. But if this thing had been put on the shelves the way he actually designed it, I think people would have like come after Color Forms, the company who owned it, with torches and saying that
it's a
horrible thing they're trying to release. It is frightening looking.
Yeah, the designs on them are so awesome. Like, all the characters, the designs are great. But Revell, I mean, it's the only action figure line they ever did. They were known for a company that was doing model cars.
I said Color Forms, didn't I? I meant Revell.
Yeah.
Color Forms was our Outer Spaceman line we did. Yeah. Revell, you're right.
Yeah, but they could only do so much back then, and there was, you know, manufacturing.
Well, yeah, and one of the biggest mistakes they made with that line is they used the same kind of plastic that they were making their model kits with. It's like this hard, like very brittle ABS plastic. And now, years later, if you have some of those original toys, you have to be very, very careful if you want to play with them and like put them in any sort of pose, because the articulation now will just crumble in your hands sometimes.
I have a full set of the figures, and they're all thankfully unbroken, but I'm never going to try the action features on them because...
I wouldn't do that.
Yeah, that plastic would just not handle any kind of movement or mechanism inside at this point. I think it would just fall apart.
No.
But
I think you'd be asking for trouble. I think it would explode.
Exactly. So you guys are able to take those original designs and actually translate into a figure that's worthy of the design now. Now, you went with, starting off with the line, you went with a 4-inch scale.
Uh-huh.
What was the decision to go with the 4-inch scale? Because a lot of people online complain that it's not 6-inch scale. I personally like that it's 4-inch scale, but what was the reasoning behind it?
Well, my preference is 6-inch scale for action figures, but if it's an action figure line that can utilize vehicles and playsets and stuff, which we kind of envision the Power Lords line to be, especially with a vehicle like Trigor and some of the other vehicles and things that they had,
the power ship,
the playsets and stuff. Yeah. Then I think 3¾ is definitely the way to go. The technology, the way it is today, we can fit the same amount of detail and stuff into a 3¾ figure as we can into a 6-inch scaled figure. Sometimes depending on the style of figure, the articulation might, be a little less, but, as for Power Lords, I mean, like I said, we wanted to do cool vehicles and cool play sets. And just so those things didn't get like crazy out of scale and crazy huge and crazy expensive, we decided to go with a 4-inch scale for those, or 3¾ is what we were calling it. But everybody seems to switch to the 4-inch scale, calling it the 4-inch scale now. But yeah, that's what we decided to go with just pretty much for that reason. At the time, also, we were pricing out figures, and it was a little different than it is now in that doing four-inch figures, it was coming in a lot cheaper than doing 6-inch figures. We've been pricing 4-inch figures lately, and you know it's the cost of figures produced at either 4-inch or 6-inch. It really isn't that much different now for some reason. I don't know why, but at that time, a couple of years ago, it was both the price of producing the figures and the chance of possibly making cool vehicles and cool play sets for them.
Well, I for one, am a big fan of the 4-inch scale.
I
like the 6-inch too, but there's so much 6-inch stuff that it is nice to see something this cool in 4-inch. Plus, I think you guys kind of started a 4-inch renaissance kind of after that, because there's a lot of 4-inch line Kickstarters now. A lot of people are looking at the 4-inch scale more, I think. And what it's what you can do in that 4-inch scale, and like you said, with vehicles and creatures and all that stuff. I'm really glad.
A big tip of that hat goes to Matt Dowdy and his crew over at O'Neill Design, the people who do the Glios figures.
Yeah.
Because I know that a lot of people are utilizing that the Glios compatibility. It's a play system where you can pop apart your figures and like interchange parts and stuff. And the Power Lords originally had that Glios compatibility at that scale. With this new one, the new wave that we're doing, there's various reasons, but we're not going with the Glios compatibility on these things. But there's a lot of other small companies that are starting up that are working with Matt on that and using the Glios system and creating a lot of new 4-inch lines. There's a lot of new and exciting stuff happening because of, you know, Matt and him helping young new toy designers and toy making companies. Helping them along with like production and design on that stuff. So yeah, I think that he had a little bit more of a hand in that kind of renaissance than we did. But then since then, like you said, there've been a lot of 4-inch Kickstarters that have been very successful that, the people are doing, and they don't necessarily use the Glio system, but at that scale, there seems to be a lot more new companies doing that now.
Yeah. Speaking of the Glios compatibility, we're going to talk about the current figures in a minute, but since we already mentioned it, let's go ahead and talk about it real quick. So the first waves, both the Griptog and his variants, and Adam Power and his variants, all the different Power Soldiers, they utilized that Glios compatibility, so you could switch out the pieces and parts. And you're saying that the new ones don't. Now, I personally am not going to miss it that much, because on the Power Soldiers, it was neat to be able to switch out the parts and make your soldiers look all different. But this wave of figures, I think there will be less. I think there's less. I don't know the right way to phrase this.
Like compatibility
exactly.
Between the various figures.
Totally. Yeah.
I mean, that was one of the reasons there were various reasons, but that was one of the main reasons that we decided not to go with Glios compatibility with these, because even though they're all going to be 4-inch scale, the types of figures that we have, the types of characters, they're so varied with the Power Lords that you're not going to be able to take an arm off Disguisor and put it on Adam Power. It's just not going to work.
Yeah, it seems less useful.
Let's go ahead and do away with that. It doesn't really make sense to, you might be able to change like Disguisor and Disguisor variant parts, or Atom Power and Lord Power variant parts, but between different character styles, there's not going to be a lot of interchangeability. And to sacrifice, you know, possible stability of the character, instead of adding in more articulation and new articulation, we just decided let's go with the newer articulation and not go with the Glios compatibility this time.
So for this, so for the first batch, it was you had the Griptog and you had Atom Power and then a bunch of variants, and you kind of trickled those out over a couple of years of releases. She had some introductory bagged figures, and you had some carded figures, and then we had some more bagged figures and some exclusives here and there. But this time around, though, you're doing things a lot different than that batch, where you're doing 17 figures, basically four new sculpts with four to five variants apiece, and all at once. Now, what was the decision to do it that way instead of what you were doing before?
Well, because we've had a little bit of experience doing that with, like, large wave drops. Here's my thing. As a collector, I don't know if you guys know, but I'm an avid collector. I'm a geek and everything. But when I see an action figure on the shelf, and it's maybe one or two figures from a possible wave of figures, I'm not all that interested. Mm-hmm. When I see them start releasing four, five, six figures, and I see that I can start making collection, it starts to interest me. One example would be, I think it's Bandai. I can't remember which company is making them, but Star Wars did these like samurai versions of Darth Vader and Boba Fett and Stormtroopers.
Is that Figma?
And now they're doing Marvel versions of these samurai guys.
Yeah.
And they're beautiful designs. But when I saw the Darth Vader, I thought, oh, that's really cool. But I'm not really just a Darth Vader collector, so I wouldn't just put that on my shelf. And then a Stormtrooper came out or two. I was like, oh, those are cool too. But, you know, a Darth Vader and a couple Stormtroopers, it doesn't really work with my collection. Now they've got a whole collection. They're even doing like Darth Maul, and then they're doing the Marvel ones, and I'm like, oh man, that's going to drag me. Now that I see a bunch of them, I'm going to need to go back and play catch up. So we have kind of experimented with that with both Mythic Legions and the Gothitropolis Ravens and some of the other stuff that we've done, and realized that that's kind of a successful formula when you release waves of figures at once instead of just, you know, larger waves of figures, instead of just trickling out one or two variants. Then sales are slow, and they may build, or people may lose interest. So you release a bunch at once, and you know it's an instant collection. You might have to spend a big chunk of change, but you're going to spend this chunk of change over a year, or you're going to spend it all at once, and you instantly have this collection of figures on your shelf. So that seems to work pretty well for us. So we decided to go with that model this time and see how it works with Power Lords. It's worked with some of our other lines that we've produced. So figured we'd give that a shot and see how it works.
It seems pretty good. I mean, with other companies, it seems like there has been the risk of a line not getting finished out. Mm-hmm. I mean, when they're doing the one and two figures, like when they did that with Thundercats, it was, Lion-O and whoever, and then
Bandai.
And then we're done, sorry. And you don't get your collection, so...
Well, that I would think that it also helps with costs at the factory, probably too, to do like a larger amount at once, right? And
it
as
does.
Opposed to just a couple. Plus, like you just said, it's you closer to getting that full line each time if you have a good assortment each time. I also like what you guys did because there's other Kickstarters, and I feel like sometimes I can't get into it because they keep adding stuff on as it goes along. And to me, I do like the fact that you guys are like, it's 17 figures, that's it. Here's the pre-order. It's these 17. These are the ones you're going to get. It's not going to be adding more stuff on as we move forward. And if the Kickstarter gets this amount of funding, we can add in this and do this. This way I know I'm going to spend this amount of money. That's all there's going to be. And I'm cool. I want to appreciate what you guys did with it. I was able to do the all-in pre-order. And I know what's going to hit my bank account when October comes rolling around. So let's talk about some of these variants here that we've got going in this second wave. First of all, there's four sculpts this time. There is the armored Power Soldier / Atom Power sculpt. There is the Psydot and his variants, Raygoth and his variants, and Disguisor and his variants, right?
Exactly.
Okay. Now, for the Atom Power, there are what? There's how many of him?
Five, right?
Five of him, five. And then...
Well, I mean, there's Atom Power and then four variants.
Okay. And so,
and with all the others, there's the main character and then three variants of each of them.
Okay, got it. So they're making for a total of 17 figures.
Yes, sir.
And the figures themselves are $22 each. If you do the all-in pre-order, it's $355, which gives you a discount if you bought all 17 separate.
Yeah, you get a little bit of a discount if you go all-in.
Now, so these are going to have more articulation this time around. Like, you've tweaked some of the articulation, got like the ball-jointed hips that people were wanting from before. And there is, it seems like there's maybe a couple of, it seems like maybe there's some new sculpted elements in a lot of the variants. Whereas before, you know, there were new things on the Griptog variants, but it's mostly just like maybe a new head. And they didn't seem quite as distinct as the variants seem like this time. They seem very distinct.
Right.
Now, do you have a fave variant of all the ones that have been shown?
I'm sorry, do I have a what?
Do you have a favorite variant or a favorite figure of the second batch?
Yeah, I do. It's the, I can't remember his name. Is it Garg? Gorg?
Grog.
It's the big, ugly red variant of Disguisor.
I was going to ask you about
doesn't
that
have,
one.
Yeah, the one that doesn't have a spinning head, the big thug monster.
Roar.
I'm always a big fan of, like, the big, bulky, almost as wide as they are tall kind of characters. The Thing is my favorite comic book character of all time, and so that guy, he just kind of speaks to me because it's just this big. I like Disguisor, but that guy just has that big, beefy, bulky, monstrous look to him. So he's my favorite of all of them.
I like him a lot too, and I think it's interesting that he's the odd man out of the Disguisor variants because there's Disguisor, Deceptor, Deceivor, and they're all obviously in the same vein as each other with their spinnable heads. And you got Groar, whose name is very much like Groar, one of the Griptog characters, and then it's got the two G's and the two R's on the end, and he looks almost like he's like Griptog with like the red skin and the greenish eyes. So is that an intentional like kind of crossover between the two alien species?
Yes, it is. It's good that you picked up on that. There's a story behind that I can't reveal just yet, but yeah, that's a little bit of a backstory on that.
Okay, great. That's all. Yeah, I thought he was really neat. And it's a cool way of using that body to give us a different alien kind of species while still fitting in with the other ones, but giving something new. I feel the same way about that Shivix variant on the Armored Up Powered Assassins. He's obviously got the same facial characteristics as Shea. So maybe he's a connection to her species, which I think was Maru is the planet that she's from.
You really have a good eye, huh?
Hey, thanks, man.
There's absolutely connections between some of the other races and characters that you see there. But we're not going to reveal too much about that just yet. If this project actually goes through and comes to fruition, then we're going to have a little bit of that background on the back of their packages. So,
oh, that's awesome.
Just a little bit of a teaser about that. I'm really surprised that somebody picked up on that so quickly. That's really good.
Hey, thanks, man.
He's got an eye for detail.
Yeah, I've been poring over those pictures since they were first shown, and I saw that certain things in there. I was like, oh, that's what
they're doing. Well, here's a little tidbit for you then. I don't know if you've watched. If you go to powerlordsreturn.com, is the Wiz. One of our friends he's not in the industry, but he's in the industry with us. He just did a review on all the prototypes that we showed at PowerCon.
Yeah.
And the blue and white one, Dr.
Wayne Barlow.
His name is named after Wayne Barlow.
Yeah.
Because originally Psydot was Wayne Barlow's favorite character, and he named Psydot after his parents, Psy and Dot.
That's awesome. Yeah. I watched every one of those videos he put up.
Oh, cool.
And I think his YouTube name is Adam Power, even. And as they were coming up, I was like, oh, man, I'm loving these. So I noticed the Waybar thing. Like, when I saw it, I was like, oh, he's named after Wayne Barlow. But I didn't know about the Psydot thing until I watched the video.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really cool. Yeah. That's a cool little... And that's a great variant, too, because it comes with that baby Trigor.
Yeah, he comes with a baby Trigor.
That is so neat.
That's another question. Now, he's like a doctor, and he has this little baby Trigor. Does he raise these things and experiment on them and turn them into vehicles, or does he just happen to have this little baby?
I like to think he just delivered it.
Is he protecting this for some reason? So why does Dr. Waybar have a baby Trigor?
He's a pediatrician.
He just delivers the babies and then he sends them.
Yep, sends them on, cuts the umbilical cord.
That's it.
He's
so that's even though the Power Lords is a a licensed property, with everything that we work on, we try to kind of build a little bit of a story around each character. It's not just, oh, this would look cool, let's throw this out there. There's usually a reason for the design or the look or the character name or the character itself when we put stuff out there.
So, I think that's important.
I mean, you kind of see with at least three of these characters we just talked about, there's a little bit of a backstory that
yeah.
I'd like to hopefully hold back some of the surprise and intrigue on some of these characters.
I think you have to give people something to hold on to other than just an aesthetically pleasing chunk of plastic. There has to be character development and things like that.
I'm so excited.
We totally agree.
It's like when I was pretty heavy into Motu Classics for a long time, and we were getting the story through those bios. I was addicted to those bios. Even though some of them weren't the best, it was a really cool thing to have some kind of story going on with the figures. So, and as a kid, I always loved the file cards on G.I. Joe and
mini comics,
the little tech spec things on Transformers, the mini comics, anything that where I could get the figure and get something else with it, like a little bit of information or story or something.
Absolutely.
To kind of, you know,
one
get my playtime started.
One of the questions that we get asked most, I'm sorry?
I said it kind of got my playtime started. Like, it gets your imagination going. And you take it from there with your toys.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, one of the questions that we get asked most often when we're at conventions or whatever is when somebody sees one of our properties that they're not familiar with, they pick it up and they say, oh, is there a cartoon or a comic or some kind of storyline that goes along with this? And every time we just tell them, on the side of the package, we have like a little character bio there. And it's enough to give you information about the character and get you interested in it. But it's not enough that it just gives the whole character's backstory away.
Yeah.
It gives you a little bit of information. And usually on the back of the packages, we try to include a little bit of the history of the whole mythos of whatever toy line this is itself, too.
I think that's enough.
And
to
people
get
seem to appreciate that.
I think it's great.
Get the imagination going for these people. They'll fill in the blanks, you know?
Well,
yeah.
The thing about Power Lords, too, is it's not like Thundercats or He-Man or Transformers where it's got all this story and things you could build off of. Power Lords really only had the 3-issue DC Comics miniseries, the stuff that was written on the back of the cards, and then, like, coloring books and a board game. But no, like, you know, lasting comic series or cartoon or something. So there's a lot that you guys can fill in on your own and build up on your own to kind of create your own mythos about it, you know?
Absolutely, and the people who own the license are completely really cool about that and totally open to us allowing us to do that too, letting us kind of create a new, I mean, of course we're taking into account everything that's come before, but creating a new story on top of that if we can. They're being totally cool about us doing that.
That's exciting, man. I really hope that, I know you guys talked to before when Power Lords was first coming back about other, like, media tie-ins, like maybe comics or you know, I remember in Magma Corps, you had that Dave School, like, animated short for that.
Yeah.
And that was super cool. So any, like...
Yeah, it was great. They did a great job with that.
I'm hoping that there is, you know, is there, like, a goal, like, after the pre-order's over, and if it goes through, is that stuff kind of in the wings? Like, media-type stuff?
Not yet. I mean, first and foremost, we want to focus on trying to hitting the goal for this pre-order and getting this thing to go through and actually being able to produce these figures. But I mean, if it actually does, then absolutely. I mean, that's nothing is off the table. I mean, we've had many, many people interested in working with us to do Power Lords comics, some Power Lords animation, maybe even like some kind of phone app games, things like that.
Oh, that's cool.
I mean, first and foremost, our interest is action figures, it's toys. So we want to make sure that happens first, or any of that other stuff to us is just, you know, it's good if it happens. It's all icing on the cake, but it doesn't matter to us as much as the toy line itself does.
Well, that's a toy line first and foremost, which is great. And so if the market's there for the actual toys, then that'll prove if the market's there for the other things.
I think so.
So that's awesome. So the pre-order is up now, and it lasts until October 6th, right?
Yes, sir.
That's at storehorseman.com, because I want to make sure we get that in there before we forget to say it or something. So it's storehorseman.com.
Yes,
it lasts until October 6th. There are a couple of questions.
And the money will not, you'll use your credit card. The money won't be removed from your credit card until, you know, if we actually meet the goal that we need to hit, then that's when we'll start collecting money from credit cards. You may see, especially if you're a new buyer, you may see a charge that pops up on your credit card saying that you've been charged, but you won't. That's just the store. It automatically like I guess the credit card company runs your card through processing to see if it's a real card and everything, just it's for safety.
Yeah,
and then that charge will drop off there in a couple of days. We've gotten a couple of emails asking about that, saying, oh, I got charged, and I'd email them back saying, just wait a couple of days, that charge actually will drop off your card and you won't, it won't show up on your actual bank statement.
Yeah, my, mine
when
has
we manually it. Process the orders, then that's when we'll collect the money from the credit cards.
Yeah, it's I've got the temporary charge on mine now, but the minute I saw it, I was like, okay, well, that's just a temporary hold. It's going to drop off.
Yeah, a couple of days, that should drop right off there.
And then after October 6th, about how, I mean, will it be pretty immediate after October 6th that you know whether or not you hit the goal that you'll be able to tell everybody?
I mean, right now, we're, as a matter of fact, I mean, if you're on the fence about whether you're going to get on board with this or not, go ahead and do it, because I mean, we expected to be a little bit farther than we are now. We're only about a quarter away there. It's going to have to meet our goal. We just can't produce the figures.
And that's totally understandable. So, and I think you guys are really fair with the pricing on this batch too. You can't be making a lot, keeping them this low with this low of a production number.
Well, I don't know if you saw the post that I put up, but we were literally fighting with the factory to get the prices down on production, because the original prices they came back with it, this was as much as the 6-inch Mythic Legions line.
Oh,
and I don't know how that's possible, because they're half the size and, you know, they articulate, they're highly articulated and they have great paint detail, but not nearly as much as our Mythic Legion stuff. They don't have nearly as much as far as like accessorization goes and our separate armor pieces and things like that. So how they were coming up with the prices they were coming up with, we have no idea. And we found out that they, I don't know, they somehow miscalculated, in quotes. And I think they thought we'd just go, okay, let's go ahead and run them. And they didn't think we'd come back and say, wait, what's going on here?
Yeah.
But yeah, we fought back and forth with them until the day we were going to be putting that pre-order up.
Wow.
We thought we weren't even going to be able to put the pre-order up, because we weren't going to be able to get the prices down to a point where we thought that people would want to pay for them. So yeah, we kind of lucked out there. We were scraping right at the very end to make sure that price got down to where we could put them. $22 is a little bit still more than we would like to sell them for, but I mean, that's where it is. Our factories that we use are normally very fair. They're very professional and that stuff, but this, I don't know, they had a brain glitch or something. I'm not sure what happened, but
well,
we finally got them down to a place where we could reasonably price these things. So that's where we're at this point.
If the quality is as good as those first wave is, then it's well worth it, because the paint quality on those first ones, the 4-inch, the Atom Power, the Griptogs, all those variants, were incredible, especially like the carded ones, because on the bagged ones were obviously, they were a cheaper version with less paint apps. But the carded stuff, the paint apps on those is incredible. That Atom Power and that Griptog are just awesomely painted 4-inch figures. I also loved they have like a flat coloring to them, like a flat paint.
Uh-huh.
Instead of a super glossy, like a lot of times you'll see that stuff gets super glossy with paint, and not so on those. Those were great, beautiful painted figures.
The factory that's doing the new Power Lords figures, or that's going to be doing the new Power Lords figures, is the same factory that did our Mythic Legions trolls for us.
Oh, those look
and
great.
Those came out just spectacular. So, I mean, I really think that these guys are going to do a bang-up job on the Power Lords figures as well.
So I'm not even going to address what the game plan will be if the pre-order doesn't go through, because basically the pre-order needs to go through, because then it proves that the audience is there, they're willing to get it. Anything else that's a secondary plan afterwards is going to be going, okay, well, we know we can only sell this amount, so it's going to be tough for us to make this work. We already know.
That's exactly the thing. I mean, we absolutely do have to hit that goal. And even if the goal that we hit, if we barely make it, we're still going to do it. We won't be making any extra money on top of it. It'll be enough that we can produce the figures and have a little money to move on to the next wave of the figures and actually start production on those without having to kill ourselves. But if it doesn't meet that goal, then the only way we could produce the figures is to do them at a higher price. And I don't think anybody wants us to do that. We don't want to do that. We don't. You know, I don't want to sell these things for $25 or $30. It's just, to me, a 4-inch figure should not be that expensive.
Totally.
Yeah, I just don't see them being that expensive. And it's probably because I'm an old fart or whatever.
We all are.
We are.
There are a lot of lines out there that, you know, the 4-inch figures. For instance, Boss Fights has that Bucky O'Hare line.
Yeah,
that we talked about $35 per figure.
Yeah.
Those are beautiful, yes, incredible figures. And I'm a huge fan of Michael Golden, the guy who did the Bucky O'Hare comic for Continuum. And these things look so much like his artwork, and they're just beautiful.
Yeah.
But I'm still very hesitant because
$5
a piece is a lot to pay for an action figure. Now, these, they're highly articulated. They're beautifully sculpted and painted. They come with a lot of accessories. And I know what production costs, so I understand where that price is coming from.
Sure.
So, I mean, I'm sure they're well worth it if you're a collector that has to have them, but I still have that hesitation that, wow, $35 is a lot to pay for a little 4-inch figure. And it is, but, I mean, that's just kind of the way things are now.
Yeah, that's what it looks like, and we're in the same boat, and it's like you're going to have these niches show up, I think, like people who really, really want and have to have a Bucky O'Hare and who are all about it will probably go in for it. But, you know, we're kind of on the fringe of that. I like Bucky O'Hare a lot. I like the comic. I like the cartoon. Cool looking, great looking figure, but not for me. It's not $35
worth. So. Yeah.
But as long as you have that core fan base, showing up to support things, I think it'll,
and that may be one of the reasons. I mean, obviously they're probably paying some sort of licensing fee,
right, they
probably understand that it's a very niche market for those, so they're going to have less sales, so they price it a little bit higher to cover that aspect of it,
right,
too. I mean, there's a lot of things that go into the pricing. I mean, it's not just them. I just picked that out because that's a line that I've seen recently that's roughly that scale that I'm very, very into, and I think it's beautifully done, and it's hit a price point where I'm like, man, that's tough for me to justify that, even though I completely understand why they have to do it at that price.
It's a shock now, but I think that people are going to, you know, start getting used to this $20 to $25 range for the 4-inch figures because the Kickstarter, the small companies, that's where everything seems to be headed. I mean, if you want something cool and unique and different than just another Batman figure or Spider-Man or something, which those are fine too, but a lot of people our age, I think, are looking for other different stuff and stuff from their childhood.
I do agree with that.
And that's the way it's going, so.
I'm in the same boat where, I think we discussed it on the show here before too, where we really like it, but like you said, the price point is a little tough. But I think, like you said before about us being old fogies, that it plays into a lot too, where we're older, so we know what we used to pay for small figures. So we've become accustomed to that growing up. And for people that are getting into it now, it's not that bad to them. You see, I went into Toys R Us the other day, and they had these, I guess they're Figuarts wrestling figures.
Yeah.
And they're probably 5-inch figures, and they're $40 each at Toys R Us.
Oh.
Yeah. And it's crazy. I mean, you can look at other wrestling figures that are there, and they're $10 or whatever, but it's because they're a higher-end thing, and they've got the extra heads and the different articulation, and it's probably a much lower production run than what Mattel's doing with the actual wrestling figures. So in the back of my head, I'm going through all these things to justify this higher price, but to a lot of people that are collecting that kind of stuff, they don't even have to justify it. They know that this is what you're paying now.
Yeah, I know. I mean, to really, really date myself, I remember when the Star Wars figures first came out, and I was finding them at stores for like $3.50 each. It's like, you can't even imagine a figure being anywhere near that now.
Totally, so, man.
It's just the way things go, I guess, you know. And like I said, I understand what production costs are, and I understand, you know, why they would have to price it in certain ways, but it's kind of hard to swallow. But it's just the way things go,
I guess. That's the way it is.
Yeah.
So, okay. So back
on
to...
I started to say a few minutes ago, on the as far as the Power Lords, you had said something about, you know, the variants all have like little different things. They do. One of the things about the Disguise Wars that we haven't revealed yet is each of those dial faces that you can spin and change faces in there.
Yeah.
Each one of those Disguise Wars has a different disc in there with different faces on it.
That's awesome.
So you're going to be able to pop that apart and like swap the faces.
Oh,
on
that's way cool.
And have different faces. I think each face has four. I mean, each Disguise Orb has four different faces on that wheel. I'm not exactly sure.
The original Disguise Orb had four.
Yeah, I think it's four. And so the variant Disguise Orbs have four different faces on each of those discs. So,
and
they're pretty cool. There's one that looks like a piranha. That's my favorite.
I like the bone colored one, and that one is called Deceptor.
Yeah, Deceptor got a lot of love at PowerCon.
He's really neat.
Him in person.
I love his faces almost seem like skulls inside there. It's really, really neat looking. Just really awesome designs where you guys have kind of extrapolated on what Barlow had done. Plus, I mean, obviously, like you said, there's other stuff that he'd done that we never even saw. But all of it kind of just still fits in that world. Anything that's new still fits in with what we saw before. It's really awesome.
Here's the thing. I want to get to the third wave so we can Arcus. So we can do Shia. Arcus is my favorite Power Lords character of all time.
Yeah.
And there's this cool little simian drawing. It's like this little, I don't know, like a gibbon-looking guy that Wayne Barlow sketched up in his designs that I want to turn into a Power Lords character too.
That's awesome.
Has never seen the light of day. But yeah, I want to get to the third and fourth wave of those. So,
well, I want to
see this go through.
I want to ask a couple of questions. I want to talk about the future, but I want to ask a couple of questions that I've read online just really quickly about the current ones. Now, some of the Psyduck, well, all of the Psyduck variants, but not Psyduck himself, show an extra head in the picture, but in the description of what you're getting, it's not listed. Do they come with those extra heads?
Here's the thing. We want to, if this goes through, if it barely scrapes past, then we may or may not include extra heads with the figures. It just depends on you know, how the costing works out. But if this actually passes and we make a decent margin on it, then we want to include a variant head, at least one variant head with every character. And like for the Skyzors, it would be a variant wheel.
Oh, that's
for
cool.
Every character. Yeah. So every character you buy two or three and you can turn them into two or three different characters if you'd like.
Well, I'm hoping
that's our hope. Fingers crossed. But I know that we didn't have the heads listed in the descriptions. And some of them had like a variant head shown with the character. That's just to show you what the possibility might be of having variant heads with these.
That makes complete sense. Yeah, because that's the first place to start cutting costs. We learned that when we were collecting Motuk, was that a good way to start cutting costs is including those extra
heads. It really
is,
because, I mean, as hard as it is to believe, a lot of times the heads on characters cost more than most of the rest of the figure as far as paints go, because...
Yeah.
There's a lot of paint detail and a lot of paint applications in one head. So cutting a head out of a package, a variant head, saves a figure a lot of money in production.
Well, I'm hoping that Shavix then gets his three-eyed human-looking head. If he were to have that ability, like Shea or Shia, however you want to say her name, if he were to have that ability like her, it would be cool if that was the extra head. I'm just saying. The other question was Psyduck's armor. He's been shown with it and without it.
Uh-huh.
Does his armor come off?
It's removable.
It is removable.
Yeah, and we're going to try to do them, if we can get the factory to do them, we're going to try to do it in the armor pieces in an ABS plastic and do them in like a vac metal, chrome look. Yeah.
Yeah, because the vintage one had both vac metal and just regular silver or grayish.
Yeah.
But the vac metal is way cooler.
They're going to be like vac metal red and vac metal, colors are.
That's awesome.
And the all the Ragos will come with two separate chest plates. One, you know, you can leave the chest plate off and you can just see that strange mirror pattern that they all have on their chest in different colors.
Yeah.
Or you can put the clear chest plate on so you can actually see that through there and it kind of gives it a different look. Or you can put we have a flat colored chest plate that goes over it where you completely obscure that all together. And you can take those colored ones and mix and match them between different Ragos to give them a different look too.
That's awesome. I like the customizability of the whole line. Even if you don't have the Glios compatibility, you still got a lot of customization you can do on these characters, which is awesome. Another question that people had was, why was there maybe no army builder packs this time? Like people that want to buy multiples of, say, the Power Assassin, is there a possibility that maybe adding in, say, like
a
5-pack?
We might actually do that. We actually have gotten a couple of emails. The reason we didn't do that, normally when we do our army builders, we do that as what we call in Mythic Legions, we call them Legion builders. And what they are is they are pretty much the same characters that you get in a regular Mythic Legions figure pack, except sometimes they'll have a little bit less accessories, and they definitely always have less paint. The paint saves us a lot of money if we do much less paint application, and so we can pass that on to customers. And rather than a customer paying $35 for a fully painted, fully accessorized Mythic Legions figure, if we cut back on the paint and make it a very basically painted figure, we can drop that price all the way down to $22 for the customer. So we create these Legion builders that people can collect those and build their armies up. With Power Rangers, we didn't do that with any.
Wait a second. You said Power Rangers.
Oh, I'm sorry. Power Rangers. Power Lords.
You got to nip that in the bud, buddy.
Power Lords. We didn't do that. We didn't create any Legion builders, but we will go back and pick a couple of them out of each group and turn them into army builders or create some way that you can do like an army builder kind of thing with them. Yeah, that was something we kind of considered, and then we just didn't because we just hadn't created any lower priced army builders with them. But we'll see if we can do that and maybe add something in, maybe make a couple of very basically colored ones and throw those in there and see what happens.
So for people that do want to army with the ones that are fully painted, they should put the pre-order in for as many as they want, because that would every bit helps. So if you feel like you're going to want five of this Power Assassin, put in the pre-order for five of them. Don't just put in for one and think you're going to buy four later on. Put the pre-order in for
you can always
five.
Go back and cancel your order and then order something else if you want. Sure.
Yeah, it's you really got to get as many as you want right now, because every bit of those numbers is going to help this go through. Because if you
I completely agree with that.
Anything
to get this to go through,
we'll
try to push it that way.
Yeah. So if you think you might want five later on, then put in the order for five, because you may not get any at all if you don't pony up now.
This is true.
Okay, so moving forward, if we make it through this one, the other question was, we already talked about that. I'm going to skip past that. Moving forward, so the future of the line, we managed to do, the first one we only got two of the vintage characters out. This one we're getting out three of the vintage characters, so you've done four. It would take another, I'm trying to remember how many vintage figures there are now off the top of my head.
Don't remember off the top of my head.
I think there's 10 total.
There's still quite a few left. Another couple waves at least.
There's 10 total, and you've covered five. If we get through this, we've covered five. So for the next wave, are we looking at maybe another three vintage characters and one new character again, like this wave
that's
is?
That's what I think. Yeah, I think that's the way that we should do it. If this goes through and it looks like it's going to be popular enough that we're going to be able to do more waves, then the way I think that we should do it is do at least three of the other vintage characters and one or two new characters that, you know, had never been seen before. There's also one that was done in like little wind up style that was never released as a figure in the toilet. I think it was called, Jester? I can't remember what it was called. But we want to do that one as well. And we want to take some of Wayne Barlow's designs that weren't turned into action figures and do those too. So for the wave after that, we'd probably do two or three vintage characters to kind of wrap up all the vintage characters, and then another one or two of the new characters.
I like the importance of it really is, obviously, by showing that the majority is going to be redoing a vintage instead of introducing something new. I like that. They're trying to finish off something first before you get too far into the extra stuff.
Right.
And like you said, Arcus is slated for Wave 3. He is also my favorite of all of them. I think most people will count him as their favorite, because he's such a cool design. And man, I want that Arcus figure.
He's insanely scary.
He is so odd and cool and such. I mean, he fits. You put him next to Skeletor and Megatron and all those guys, and he is just, even if you don't know Power Lords, he's such a cool design that he just looks awesome. He stands up to all the other ones just because his design is so great.
And I cannot wait for us to take that thing and articulate it the way that it needs to be articulated. Because if you have that original Arcus figure from the 80s, and you do not try to play with that one now, because I'm certain with how thin the joints and everything were on that it'll just absolutely shatter.
Oh, for sure. Mine stays in one position and never moves.
Thing, but it can't.
It is great what Revell pulled off back then, though. That's a very highly articulated, skinny little figure.
Yeah, it is.
And so it, had they used better plastic, it would be probably still hanging on and still be one of the best articulated figures of that early era.
I think so.
But I can't wait to see what you guys actually do with him finishing. If we finish off this pre-order and make it into it, to see him in production would be awesome. Please, people, pre-order so we can get to that. Vehicles and playsets, you've already said that it's something you guys want to do, but again, that's all going to depend on what happens here, right?
Absolutely. It just depends on the success and the popularity of the line and how well it goes and how well it continues to go.
Well, I think that about covers everything.
Trigor is my personal favorite. We have the drawing.
Oh, yeah.
We want to make the vehicle exactly like Wayne Barlow's original design drawing. So, I mean, that's one that I'm dying to do. Even if this line doesn't come to fruition, we may have to go ahead and sculpt that and print one out here just for us.
That is awesome. Well, I'm going to have to come over to the studio and maybe walk
and
out with one of those.
Maybe sneak one.
So that's a cool one because, like you said, the design is really cool. It even looked cool in that DC comic. But man, it is disappointing as a toy because they had to do that whole do-back thing where they pull the thing off and stick the figure inside of it, and it was kind of strange looking.
Very weird.
All right, again, storehorseman.com. The pre-order runs until October 6th. We're going to have a link. We're going to put this up on YouTube, and then we'll have a link there, and we'll also have it on our website and everything. Is there anything else you want to say about Power Lords before you move into a couple other things here on the show?
No, I mean, I appreciate everybody who's jumped in early and helped us out with this pre-order. Keep spreading the word and keep preaching the gospel of Power Lords because we really want to see this thing go through. We really want to continue with this line. We don't care if we make money on it. We're just fans, and we want to make these toys. So get in there and help us out however you can. Even if you can't afford to jump in and pay now, please spread the word.
Yeah, it's such a grassroots thing that if it does go through, the feeling that you helped it happen makes them, I don't know, makes the figures mean more to you. Like when they show up at your door, you're like, you know what, if this couldn't have happened, had we not done this? Like, have we not ponied up and done it now? So the feeling that you are a part of something is pretty cool. So, I mean, if you want to get in on this line and feel like you're a part of it, it's just no different than when they get the GoFundMes and the Kickstarters to get a project going, and then you put your name in the credits or something like that, where you feel like you're a part of it. Get in there and at least throw in a pre-order for one or two of the figures. If you find one or two that are interesting, and it's only $22 a pop on those, just get a couple of them. And then if it happens and it goes through and you have an opportunity to buy more of them, that's great. But just get in on it just for a few.
Just do it.
Just for a few, guys.
Come on.
All right. So, I'm sorry, what did you say?
He said sweet.
Okay.
Yes, please.
So there are a few things that we do on the show that are like our trademark things in the show. And there's two of them that we want to do with you, Corn Boy. One you know about, the other one you don't know about because it's kind of like a surprise thing. We do this thing, or Mike has done this thing for years. Back when I was collecting the Motu pretty heavily, he would come, we worked together. He would come to my work and he would leave these letters to Mattel on my desk where he would come up with his own He-Man characters in case Mattel runs out of ideas.
These were supposed to be like from an anonymous fan and they're kind of dumb.
Yeah, they're kind of dumb.
They're
dumb ideas. And every time I would get one, I would crack up. And he's been reading them on the show because we kept them all. So every once in a while, we'll do a letter to Mattel, and it'll be a list of ridiculous figures. This time, we both worked on a list, and we've got a guy here that actually will listen to our letter to Mattel that's connected to Mattel, that works for Mattel. So this is a golden opportunity that we can't pass up. So you're going to get our letter to Mattel right now. Are you okay with that?
Sounds like fun. Yeah, sure, let's do that.
The famous last words, it's probably not going to be that fun. But, all right, so Mike's got the intro of the letter, and then we're going to run through these characters for you.
Dear Mattel, well, it's happened, and we bet you never thought it would happen. A special team-up between my friend and myself. He likes He-Man too, and I've been told it takes two to tango. So we got together and put our dancing brain shoes on to come up with some scorching hot ideas that will help improve toy sales. So before business negotiations get in the way, we're going to give you the goods while they're still hot.
You want to go first? You want to go first?
Slandor, political commentator on Eternia, comes with goggles.
Huh? Pretty good.
Did you say Slandor?
Slandor.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
All right.
Yeah, I love that.
So here's the next one. Debitor Credits, one of Preternia's big spenders. Evil fiend with the ability to legally dispense Preternia bucks if you mail away for the secret code number. also has a microchip used to confound his enemies. They don't know how to handle him.
Corporal Grievance.
I know people like that. I don't know if I care for that one that much.
Too close to home.
Yeah.
Corporal Grievance. This is nothing like Star Wars. General of the elite evil soldiers, Grievance uses his three regular arms and one smaller arm to lead his armies into battle with the do-gooders of Grayskull Lair. No, nothing like Star Wars.
All right, you ready?
Yeah, go.
Goodwill Door. Heroic hero of used goods. Uses his ability to sell gently used items against Skullbrain and his minions. Includes extra capes that don't fit other figures.
Nice, only he can use them.
Only he can use them.
Just for him. Yeah. That's going to cost extra.
He's got them available for everybody. They're gently used, but they don't fit anybody else.
I have a love-hate relationship with Goodwill. So
Goodwill Door.
I'm kind of on the fence about that one.
Goodwill Door.
I used to love going shopping at Goodwill until... we went shopping there with my mom and my mother-in-law, and they would spend all day in there. And like,
that's a hard place to spend all day in.
That's why you need Goodwill Door. He does it for you.
He'll take care of it.
Okay, well, that'd be good. I could handle that. Bring me back all the good stuff.
If there is any. Next up is Boa Conscriptor. This scuzzy screenwriter was contracted by Skeleton to plot out He-Man's demise. Uses a magic typewriter and requires batteries.
All right, you ready for another one? There's only a few more of these, poor boy.
I only have one more.
You just gotta suffer through. I've got three more.
You were right when you said this probably wouldn't be fun.
Yeah. All right, this one. His name is Charlie Horse.
Oh man!
Watch out for this bad guy. He rides a steed and pulls muscles.
Nice.
Charlie Horse.
Oof. I fully expect.
He rides a steed.
I fully expect to see these made. By you guys.
One boy's going
to
hang up pretty soon.
Alright, my last one is Horde Hat.
What was that?
Horde Hat.
Horde Hat?
Horde Hat.
Okay.
Evil informant of many disguises, mostly hats.
That's all you got.
That's it.
Alright.
Mostly hats.
I have two.
That one's perfect. That's the winner for me.
Yeah, that was my favorite too.
I have two more for you. Fist E Cuffs.
That's
put out the same way as Manny Faces.
I think I had one called Fist
E Cuffs. This heroic warrior has hands that are almost too big to fit in standard cuffs. Also wears a sleeveless shirt.
Why not?
Because his hands are too big for the sleeves.
Fist E Cuffs.
Almost too big for standard cuffs. You can still cuff him, but it's tough.
Sleeveless shirt, so it doesn't even matter.
And the last one I have is Forehead. The number 4 hyphen head. So you can probably see where this one is going. Evil scumbag has a lot of space between his hair and his eyebrows. He might be related to T-Lore in some way.
Not a feature.
And he evolves into five heads.
Yeah. The forehead, it's teasing you, thinking he's going to have four heads, but it's just describing his forehead.
All right. Sorry about that.
Sorry, we had to get out of our system since you're here.
Man. That was good.
You have a top five, correct?
Were awful. All
right. So we're going to do a top five list. We do a top five list on the show a lot of times. And this time, it's the top five toy lines that we would love the Four Horsemen to go back and redo. You guys are the kings of bringing back old toy lines. You brought back Motu twice, Power Lords, basically superpowers in the way of DC Universe Classics, Thundercats. You guys are the kings of it. So we want to do our top five, starting at number five and working our way up. We each take turns. Toy lines we would love for you guys to redo. We're going to try and not do any toy lines that already have a remake going.
Right.
Cornboy, you told me you cheated on something, and we'll find out what it is soon. But
yeah, a couple of things. It's kind of cheating, kind of not.
All right, well,
let's see.
We'll find out. So, Cornboy, you want to start us off with your number five pick?
My number five would be from the movie Kroll. Now, whoa. I know that there was never an action figure line made of Kroll, and that's tragic because there were some cool characters and some cool monsters in that line. You could have had some great action features, you know, him throwing that glaive at people and stuff. I mean, it would have been a great line. And
that's a cool
idea. It's
tragic
that nothing was ever done for that line.
You did get a Kroll toy line, and you could just use those. Cool. You just use those.
With the rooted
Tom
hair.
Tucker, not quite the same.
Yeah. I had the Atari game for Kroll, and I loved that game. That was such a cool Atari game. Because you had to go into like the spider pit thing, and you had to throw the the disc and catch it, and if you lost it, you're out of luck. It was a really complicated Atari game. It was really cool. Good one, man. That's a good one.
All right. I'll go next, I guess. You want to have the last
one? Yeah, you can go next.
My number five is Captain Power.
Ooh. Ooh, that's a good one.
That is a good one. Gary Goddard still retains the rights to that.
Okay.
And that was a Mattel product.
I remember when my son had those little Captain Power spaceships, and he played that silly game that came on the VCR tape, and it was awful and didn't really work well.
No, it was terrible.
He had fun anyway.
But there were cool ships and cool characters.
Yeah, I just like that you could look through his chest, and he was just a gold guy. Anything with vac metal eyes was cool.
It's some cool villains in that, too. Yeah, cool villains in that. Number five for me is Tiger Sharks. That would fit right in with Thundercats. And that I think the Rankin and Bass did the animation for that, too, and LJN did the toys. I can't remember if Rankin and Bass
the toys
did
that were out for 1 week.
Yeah, exactly. And I've told the story on the show a ton of times. When I was a kid, I loved that cartoon. And I was dying for toys. And back then, you didn't know what toys were out until you saw them in a store half the time. We went to, I believe it was, we went to Kmart first, and I got a Fright Features Janine. And then we went to Toys R Us, and there were Tiger Sharks figures there. And I begged my mom for one of these. She's like, you already got a toy. Can't get two toys on one trip. Never saw them again.
Oh, shit, Mom.
Yeah, I know. Never saw them again. And that it's cursed me since then.
And I had the same experience also.
But I actually like those designs, and I liked the cartoon better than I liked Thundercats. Ooh. Maybe sacrilege to say that, but I would have loved to see you guys do Tiger Sharks. All right, what's your number four, Clone Boy?
My number four, and it would be higher, but because I really loved this line when it was first released, even though I never had any of the actual big beasts, I had a lot of the little Rider characters with Dino Riders. I freaking loved that action figure line.
Yes.
And I would love for us to get the chance to redo that, but I don't know how likely that is.
I will say that's the first line that's on all three of our lists.
Oh, really?
Because I'm looking at Mike's list and I see it on there. It's on my list. And
well, you guys have named one that's on my list, but I'm not going to
say it.
I'm not going to mention where that is.
I'll say it.
We'll get to it.
Okay, so what's your number four, Mike?
My number four is Air Raiders.
That's a good one.
You remember Air Raiders?
Very obscure. That's a good line, too. And those little guys that were in the aerator ships, I had a few of those. But I think my son might have collected those, and he kind of lost the little figures. And rather than let them remain lost, I picked them up and put them in my collection.
Yeah, they were smaller than they were smaller than Mass
lost
figures.
Them.
But they were...
Finger quotes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, yeah, really,
exactly.
Really cool look. And that's it.
Number four for me is Dungeons & Dragons.
I almost put that.
Dungeons and Dragons.
I think you guys
are doing
that.
That's called
that.
Mythic Legions.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, exactly. It's Mythic Legions is very close to what I would want to have a Dungeons and Dragons line. But to see those actual characters from that old line redone by you guys would be awesome. There were some really cool designs, and I think that it would translate really well. And even though I'm not a huge fan of the 6-inch scale, I think that they would really work in 6-inch scale. I think those would be awesome.
All right.
Yeah, I'd like to do that too. That's not on my list, but that's actually doing some of the characters from Dungeons and Dragons or any... we've had a lot of people that have requested characters from various different mythologies that would fit into Mythic Legions. It would be awesome to be able to do some of those.
Yeah.
What's your number three?
My number three is kind of cheating a little bit, but the only reason it's cheating is because nobody has ever done this line right. And it's one, because I'm selfish. I've wanted to do... since I very first got into toys, and we've gotten our chance to take a stab at it a little bit here and there, but it was only like certain versions that we were allowed to do or certain artists' versions of the characters, but it's Fantastic Four.
I know that Hasbro
is, has released the Invisible Woman, is going to be releasing the other three as well now. So there's a little bit of a resurgence for them right now. But I do not feel, especially with the Thing, that proper justice has ever been done to that action figure.
I agree. Yeah. I can't think of a definitive...
There's some good versions of the characters out there, but there aren't, what I would consider my perfect comic versions of the characters out there. Eric Treadaway sculpted a Thing figure for me for Christmas one time.
Oh, that's cool.
It's partially articulated. It's articulated at the waist, the shoulders, the wrists, and the head. And it's just absolutely beautiful. It's like a perfect... mixture of, it's got a very John Byrne style head, but the body is very much a cross between John Byrne and Jack Kirby, and it's just so gorgeous. And we've always wanted, we got to do a Thing for for Toy Biz, but it was based on the Mike Waringo drawing, which is good, but it's just, you know, not the one that we wanted to do. We've done like Invisible Woman, Human Torch, some others that were very, I think they were based on the most recent Fantastic Four animated series. And we've done some that were, you know, more based on artist designs rather than what we really wanted to do. But yeah, that's if it weren't for the other two lines that I have in number two and number one, that would be my number one just because I'm selfish.
Hey, I totally understand, man. I would love to have a great like Kirby set or John Byrne set, either one of the Fantastic Four. I think that the Fantastic Four classics that it might be the one you're talking about, the Thunder Launch thing, it came with that weird engine thing. I think that's the closest Toy Biz got.
Yeah, we did that one.
That one's great. I love that thing figure.
That's the Mike Waringo style thing that we did for Toy Biz. I actually made that ugly, stupid engine thing.
That engine thing is very Kirby-ish, though. Like, when I got that, I was like, oh, this is kind of Kirby-ish.
It's supposed to have a little bit of a Kirby look to it without going too crazy.
That, for now, that's my thing figure, and I don't think that's going to be... I don't know what Hasbro has planned for what they've got going with past, you know, the read and stuff they've shown. For now, that's my go-to thing figure. And I don't see him being topped, because he's great.
You have a Four Horsemen thing figure in your collection you didn't even know.
Hey, look at that!
There you go.
Oh, look what I've got. All right, what you got for number three, Mike?
Number three is Centurions.
That's a good one.
Oh, that's a good one,
too. We all know. Okay.
There are a lot of choices that we could have put on this list. I actually cheated a couple of times, and I feel bad about it, but
no,
I
don't feel that bad. It's don't good variety. You know, you can be a cheater, and we'll stick to the rules, and we'll have a good amount of variety.
All right.
Number three for me is Inhumanoids.
I was wondering if that was going to get make
you guys would kill at that.
Yeah.
Those big giant creatures.
You know what? Those three large ones, the Meltar.
They're still good.
Decompose and
Tendril.
Tendril. I have all three of those, and those are still fantastic.
They're still great.
But yeah, to actually be able to go in and put the kind of detail into those that we did into the Troll figure, God, that'd be amazing.
That and main figures, I think that they are kind of lackluster by today's standards, and I think that seeing you guys do those would be amazing. Not just the three big ones, but all the regular figures.
Those would be very
cool. Stumpy, was that the one that the tree's name? Was that what it was called? I can't remember what it was called. But the weird kind of tree creature, it had light pipe eyes. That would be cool to see you guys do. So it's a line with some really cool monster-y designs that I think you guys would rock at.
Yeah.
What's number two for you?
For me, number two is one of my cheats, and it's one of these was mentioned earlier, but since we started doing Masters of the Universe the classics for Mattel, the three lines we wanted to do in the same style and scale were Thundercats, Silverhawks, and Tiger Sharks.
Yeah.
All three of those in the same style and scale as Masters of the Universe classics, and we've gotten at least to do part of Thundercats, and maybe someday we'll be able to continue that and finish that off. But my number two is both Silverhawks and Tiger Sharks, kind of done in that same
combined them.
Masters of the Universe classics style and scale.
I've seen some Silverhawks customs made from your guys' figures.
I think Joe Amaro's done some.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that would be fantastic.
I've seen a bunch of both Silverhawks and Tiger Sharks done in the Motu classic style, and they look fantastic.
They really do.
Fit right in.
I had a feeling when you said that there was one that was two in one, like a bonus one, that was it, that you combined Silverhawks and Tiger Sharks. Just because Silverhawks, Tiger Sharks, and Thundercats, those cartoons
That was a trio,
all together. Yeah. Even though LJN only handled two of them and Kenner handled Silverhawks, they still work together. Man, you know what was great was that Kenner sculpt on Hardware, the little gnome guy?
Yes.
Yeah, that looked dead on.
That was a great sculpture.
That looked dead on Rankin and Bass. That was really, really cool. We're number two.
Number
for you, right?
Two for me is King Arthur and the Knights of Justice.
I don't even know that line.
It was a '90s cartoon, and Mattel they just had one line out, and they were knights, you know, but they were colorful, and their armor was kind of updated. And oddly,
it's from the '90s. I remember that line.
The Attila figure from your Mythic Legions looks a lot like Arthur.
Very much so.
The color scheme and everything. So that was you kind of did it.
So it's already done.
It's done.
You should even put it on your list.
Yeah.
Number two
more from that line then.
Number two for me is Dino Riders.
Dino Rider.
I think this combines everything that you guys would be killer at, like big dinosaurs, all the mechanical stuff on there, and you got all the human characters in these kind of sci-fi meets fantasy outfits, and you've got the bad guys that are like these weird lizard creatures with domes on their heads and stuff. And then there's like the snake guys and the ant guys. Man, you guys would rock at those.
I'd love to get a shot at that.
Dino Riders would be killer, especially if it was even close to the same scales, because then we could have those big dinosaurs that still have those little detailed sculpts.
Yeah, the little guys, I think.
Man, Dino Riders would be awesome.
Yeah.
All right, so what's your number one, man?
My number one, and anybody who knows me would probably have guessed, and we probably, to be absolutely honest, wouldn't be the people to do it, because we just about probably re-release what's already been done, just kind of update slightly, but I would love to get a chance to go back and redo Micronauts.
Oh, that's cool.
My favorite toy line of all time, and to go back and redo that in that scale with the vehicles and the interchangeability and the cool character designs, especially the aliens and stuff.
Yeah. Like
Moros and Membros and Antron. All those guys would just be, I would be in heaven if we were able to do that.
That'd be awesome.
And it seems like Micronauts keeps having this, like, herky-jerky, you think it's going to come back, and then it kind of doesn't come back.
Then,
it's going to come back? It's not coming back.
Yeah, it was released a few years ago, and then just recently, I think it was a Comic-Con, Hasbro released a set of, like, all different kinds of characters. There was Transformers and G.I. Joe characters, and there's tiny little Micronaut slug figures that were, less than an inch tall in there as well, but, you know, nobody's really taken it and done them justice from the originals, I don't think, and I'd like to do that. That'd be fun.
That's great. That would be a great one. What's your number one, Mike?
Well, my number one's Dino Riders.
There it is. Yay. All three of us. So you guys basically have to redo Dino Riders. That's the one common
I think that's a must now.
Thing on all three of them here.
Runner-up is Barnyard Commandos. So.
That's a stretch.
That would be a fun one, too. I'm not sure that it would be a line that we would want to do. Maybe if we did them more realistic would be cool, but...
That's kind of like that pretty much, but I could see you guys doing it.
I don't know if you guys are still around at McFarlane when he did those like techno spawn creatures where it was animals with all the techno parts all over them.
Yeah, that was like one of the last things we were working on when we left.
Well, there you go. There's your Barnyard Commandos. That's
why you left there.
Yeah.
That's one of the reasons,
Yeah, Todd came in and said, I want Barnyard Commandos. That's one of the reasons. We're out of here.
I would have stuck around if it was that.
My number one is Silverhawks. I had all the Silverhawks as a kid. Loved that line. And it's already been said here, it would be right in with the other two. It would be really, really cool to see you guys pull that off. I'm wondering who has the rights to that at this point.
I have no idea. We haven't even looked into that at all. I mean, when we found out that Mattel was going to be doing Thundercats, we had the chance to work on that. We absolutely mentioned to them, we should try to get Silverhawks and Tiger Shark too, but you know, just getting Thundercats in there was a miracle enough, so we went ahead and stuck with Thundercats, and then, well, we all know what kind of happened to that.
Yeah,
so.
That's a bummer.
Maybe someday.
Yeah, and the door's never closed. I mean,
no.
Not completely. I want to throw in some honorable mentions.
It up and runs with it. The door's always open.
Yeah. Some honorable mentions that I had, Battle Beasts, I think you guys would be great at, but it kind of has...
I'm a huge Battle Beast fan. I'd love to do those.
Those would be awesome. But they had those mini mates, and then there was some kind of like, I think it was like a Japanese line that was going to happen of those. So I kept it off the list because it kind of has them already.
And those releases, I mean, if you're into like the mini mates style, the kind of square and blocky style, they were nice. They were really well done for what they were. Just not something that I was really into.
Totally. Me too. Visionaries, which I kept off the list because Hasbro put that one Visionaries figure in that pack. So kind of like, it kind of counts as they're redoing it. But those are basically knights with holograms. What's that?
So then I should have left Micronauts off the list.
You're allowed to cheat, remember? We have stupid rules.
Right.
You're allowed to cheat. Visionaries, I think, would be cool because knights with holograms. And holograms are awesome. And then the last one for me was...
I have to be the blasphemer here and say that I was never really a big fan of the Visionaries line.
What?
I know.
That was the end of the show.
I just didn't like... Kind of like the blockiness of the torsos, and they were all flat with that.
The figures themselves did have an odd structure, and I guess it was...
Yeah, what I would like to have seen done was, you know, this is if the Four Horsemen redid it. What I would like to have seen done would be for them just to have had, like, kind of normal torsos, but then you could remove the front part off, the front half.
Yeah.
And then their bodies wouldn't be so misshapen and weird looking. And then you could see the holograms inside them.
That'd be cool.
And not just have that be just open there all the time.
Yeah.
Just looking at a big open.
You're talking about Nocturnals.
Oh, yeah.
Nocturnals, yeah.
You're talking about Nocturnals. Visionaries with the little night guys.
Yeah, I'm talking about Nocturnals.
Yeah.
Visionaries. Right.
Yeah, that's different.
The little night
visionaries
guys.
Visionaries were the one with the, what's that?
The little knights with the little hologram.
Right,
like,
visionaries
plate in
were
front.
The little knights. Yeah, those were cool.
Yeah. Those would be, and their holograms were really sharp back then. They're, I mean, they still look great to this day. But I was just about to say Nocturnals would be cool for you guys to do too. And that's exactly what I would want out of them, to do that irreversible piece and then look at it underneath. So it's a normal figure and not just this hologram sticker all the time. The last one from you is Defenders of the Earth, just because I want a good Phantom figure.
Yeah, I would love a good Phantom figure. I would love a good Flash Gordon figure, honestly.
I'd love a good Mandrake figure.
Let's have them all.
So, gotta make Defenders of the Earth, guys.
Give me Lothar. All right.
Wait a minute. Didn't somebody just do a Kickstarter that had a Phantom figure in it? I think it was like 5 points of articulation.
Talking about the Amazing Heroes, I think.
No, he wasn't,
but it seems like he should have been.
I think Phantom is maybe slated for the next wave. Or I think he's trying to be a Phantom, maybe?
Yeah, I think it was. I can't remember what it is exactly. Talked about.
Oh, no, no. It was, part of the Captain Action thing? For Zika?
Maybe.
Maybe Zika.
That could be, too.
It might be part of that. I can't remember.
A Phantom seems like an action figure that's been done a bunch of times, but I really only think it's been actually done once, maybe.
They did those terrible Street Players ones from the movie.
That peanut head Phantom from the movie.
And I think Charlie Flatt got one out in Amigo style at one point.
Oh, yeah, probably.
That doesn't but count to me.
I don't want Amigo style. All right, so I guess that's it then. We've eaten up enough of your time. Again, just to throw it out there again, StoreHorseman.com. October 6th is the deadline. Get your pre-order in for Power Lords. Porn Boy, we cannot thank you enough for being on the show. Pre-order it right now. Get on there right now. Stop listening to the show because it's almost over anyway. Just go to StoreHorseman.com and place your pre-order. Dude, we can't thank you enough for being on here. This has been awesome.
Oh, thank you. It was fun.
You were a blast to have on here. Maybe if this one goes through and you start up another pre-order, we'd love to have you on again. And we can, you know, you can cheat some more. And we can write another letter to Mattel.
Sounds good.
He doesn't.
Yeah, no more letters to Mattel, but the rest of it's good.
You're still going
to
get it. That's too bad. And hey, if any of those characters show up in the MOTU line, we're going to have to have a talk.
Yeah.
If you guys
could expect a little compensation for that.
If I go on Super 7 and I see Charlie Horse available, we're going to have words.
You will.
All right, so we're going to sign off on this one. Cornboy, stick around. Don't hang up your phone just yet, but we're going to stop the episode here.
Right.
So we'll sign off on this one. This has been James, Mike, and Cornboy.
Action Features.
We'll talk to you guys next time.
Bye-bye.